Soon this afternoon.
I'm just kidding.
Other places you'd rather be, right? Okay. Well, welcome. Thank you for being here today. This is the time set for argument in docket number 89277. As both sides are aware, hopefully, you'll each have 17 minutes of argument, even though the arguments are listed as 30 minutes. The first 2 minutes are uninterrupted. Obviously, you know the drill with when the bell will go off. Do you wish to reserve time for rebuttal? 4 minutes? Okay. And you can get started at your pleasure, Mr. Barr.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. Jeff Barr, bar number 7269. And with me is Alicia Ashcraft, bar number 6890. The right of citizens to engage in anonymous political conduct is a longstanding and venerable one that predates the First Amendment. The courts, this court, remain guardians of that constitutional privilege. We're asking the court to do two things today. Number one, recognize John Doe's First Amendment privilege to engage in anonymous political conduct. Number two, to direct the district court to tailor discovery, recognizing John Doe's privilege, and to employ the least restrictive means to obtain discovery, protecting that privilege to the fullest extent. And we are, of course, urging this court to adopt a balancing test like all constitutional cases. And the most analogous balancing test applied to the facts here is found in Perry versus Schwarzenegger. It's useful for its analysis of the First Amendment privilege. Perry holds that this court should balance John Doe's First Amendment privilege to anonymous political conduct with the needs of the discovery in this case. And the needs of discovery in this case, at this moment in time, hit sharply against the full disclosure of John Doe's identity. Why? It's important to keep in mind where we are in this litigation. It is very early. Discovery has just begun. There are only allegations. To adopt the district court's position, the court must presume two legal conclusions, two presumptions that have yet to be adjudicated. Number one, that there has been any tortious conduct whatsoever. There's only the allegation of tortious conduct. Number two, that John Doe was complicit in that purportedly tortious conduct. Again, there is only the allegation.
Well, that's enough. It's a notice pleading state. Why isn't that, and this had a motion dismissed, didn't it?
So the motion to dismiss standard.
You pass a motion dismiss, and then you go into discovery, and wouldn't discovery provide information that may flesh out the facts a little more? And so isn't it a little premature?
Well, so you can't unring this bell. Once his identity
right,
is.
That's a different issue.
I beg to differ, Your Honor.
With the discovery, you're correct. But in order to find some of the operative facts that are necessary to make these determinations, we need some discovery.
And
it got past the motion to dismiss initially.
So I apologize for interrupting. Mm-hmm. Two things. One, the motion to dismiss standard is very low. Mm-hmm. These facts have not yet been adjudicated. All that's been determined is that there are enough facts to proceed onward with the complaint.
But how can they make their case if they can't do discovery properly? Who are they going to depose? I mean, I know you have your defenses to the case itself, but the plaintiffs are entitled to ferret out the facts in full and fair discovery to find out, because I don't think there's any dispute that that John Doe hired this private investigator, that trackers were placed on the car, and whether or not your client had anything to do with it or not is what would be the subject of discovery, I would think.
No doubt, but courts all across this country, even in courts in Nevada, protect sensitive information all the time, impose burdens on parties all the time to protect sensitive information. So, for example, trade secrets, confidential information and trade secrets. If trade secrets are entitled to protection, how much more are constitutional privileges?
What's the sensitive information being protected here?
John Doe is asserting that he has a right to political conduct. He has the right to anonymously investigate his elected officials.
Okay. But
even again, doesn't this go to a, even to get to the First Amendment issue, isn't this non-expressive conduct? If you're talking about claims concerning tortious conduct, invasion of privacy and trespass.
The First Amendment encompasses more than just expressive conduct. We're talking here about the right to petition and the right to free speech. He is entitled to investigate his elected officials to determine if he wants to petition the government. And he's entitled to investigate.
Is that entitled to get onto the private property or, in this case, attach something to private property? How do you reconcile that?
With all due respect, Your Honor, that hasn't been adjudicated. That's just an allegation.
That was the claim. Absolutely.
And so if you're going, here's the danger. Here's the danger. You're going to infringe or invade a First Amendment right on a mere allegation.
Isn't that it?
Go ahead. Let me ask you this. I understand the concern, right? That if his name is divulged, then you can't take that back. If subsequently fact-finding reveals that he wasn't involved in a way that would make him liable civilly. That's the concern, yes?
Yes.
But aren't there ways, just like you talk about with trade secrets, where the Discovery Commission or the courts put certain orders in place for the parties not to disclose things outside a case while discovery is ongoing?
Undoubtedly. That's what we're asking the district court to do. It's what we're asking this court to do. Remand it to the district court to discover, to explore those ways. I agree that there's no unfettered right.
No. What I'm saying is the propriety of the court ordering the disclosure of the identity while also putting in orders in place if somebody were to request it about what can be done with that identity outside the confines of the case until such time as discovery is completed and motions for summary judgment or whatever they may be are brought forth.
I don't necessarily disagree with that approach. It's that the district court did not take that approach. Right. The district court is compelling disclosure at this moment. There could be potentially disclosure later on, but you can't unring that bell once it's been rung.
Well, but the disclosure is just to the other side right now. Right, the disclosure of the name. It's not go out on the courthouse steps and yell the name out to everybody. So what prohibits you from saying, okay, we get it, we need to disclose the name, but we want a protective order in the case right now that people can't talk about the name or disclose it outside this case?
But that's not what the Discovery Commissioner's order does. It's full disclosure in the case. So if for example, there were an attorney's eyes only protective order, that may be possible. I don't dispute that. There are all kinds of ways to skin this cat. We could, for example, phase discovery to determine whether or not there was tortious conduct in the first place.
Counsel, do you have a case if any case in support of the position you're taking here?
It's a combination. It's a combination of cases, not directly on point. I admit that I can see there's no direct case on point. But again, analogously, like all constitutional questions, there's a balance of the needs of the case with the balance with the rights of the constitutional interest at stake.
And how do we, without allowing them to test that through the discovery process, everything you've said here is just an assertion of some unnamed person. I did it for this reason. This is how I was feeling. This is why it happened. And we can just forget about the fact that it's a crime or a tort. But so your position is take my client's word for it in this matter. Well, strike that. That's fine.
Well, what about the case of the Hard Drive Productions Council, where if there's an allegation in that case of copyright infringement, then it diminishes the First Amendment right to anonymity?
Sure. All those copyright cases are I believe inapposite because we're dealing with an elected official here. This is not a commercial representation. And the internet's a little bit of a weird place because it's a First Amendment forum for sure, but it's not like the right to petition that is at stake here. It's not like the right to criticize your elected officials that's here. So it's distinct. Those copyright cases are distinguishable.
And I would agree with you. If the only act was hiring an investigator, that would be one thing. And I think that he would have the right to remain anonymous. But as soon as there's an allegation that there's an invasion of the right to privacy, there's tortious conduct, the cases that I've read, and I understand they're in the copyright realm, and I can't find any cases that say otherwise that support your position. So the case law that we have on hand says that if you engage in tortious conduct, your First Amendment rights are substantially diminished.
And a couple of those cases use First Amendment as a defense. We're not asserting a First Amendment defense just yet. We may. But this is a privilege at this point. These are mere allegations. That's the first thing I would say. And the second thing I would say is the Chinnanen case out of California says that hiring a private investigator to investigate elected officials' conduct is protectable activity, protectable and protected activity.
Yeah, and I agree with that.
That case didn't address anonymity, though, right?
Okay, so again, you need to use two different cases. You need to use Perry or Talley or McIntyre and Chinnanen to come to the conclusion that anonymous political conduct is protected, hiring a private investigator is protected, therefore, hiring a private investigator anonymously is likewise protected conduct.
But the question here isn't about hiring the private investigator, right? I mean, that's not the problem here. If John Doe had only hired a private investigator, we would not be here right now. The problem is that the private investigator is alleged to have put GPS trackers on two people's cars as, you know, it being hired by John Doe.
And again, Your Honor, with all due respect, you are making legal conclusions that have yet to be adjudicated. It has not been adjudicated that the conduct was tortious.
Well, I said it was alleged.
I understand.
But you have not disputed that he was hired by John Doe.
But that doesn't make him waive his First Amendment rights.
But once he commits a tort or a crime, I think the case law says otherwise.
But he hasn't committed a crime, Your Honor.
But that's the issue. The issue is not him hiring a private investigator, right? It's what the investigator is alleged to have done in the process of investigating that is the problem, not the hiring.
And here's the danger with this. If this court adopts the real party in interest position or the district court's position, you will be establishing a dangerous precedent whereby any allegation, in fact, the more salacious, the better, gets to invade a constitutional right, again, on speculative and unproven allegations.
It's not speculative that there was trackers placed on the car, correct?
Correct.
It's not speculative that Mr. McNeely placed the trackers on the car, correct?
I don't think that's disputed. That's correct.
Okay. And it's not speculative that John Doe hired Mr. McNeely.
Correct.
So why this First Amendment position, why doesn't that end at those bumpers? What is speculative about drawing that line and saying, hey?
Mr. Doe hired McNeely anonymously on the because he wanted to further his right to petition.
Are you saying Mr. McNeely doesn't know his identity?
No, Mr. McNeely does know his identity.
Then he didn't hire him anonymously.
He hired him with the understanding that Mr. McNeely would keep his identity anonymous.
And he's tried.
I'm sorry?
And he's tried.
I have a question about the pleadings. Cases elsewhere are split on whether putting a GPS on somebody's car is an invasion of privacy, depending on where the car goes and what you're doing with it. Was that briefed in district court on the first round on the motion to dismiss?
We weren't a part of the case, Your Honor, at that time, so I don't honestly know the answer to that.
Because under a lot of cases, that would be a non-starter, depending. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Chief Justice Herndon, Adam Hosmer-Hinner, along with Jane Suskin for Real Parties in Interest, Hillary Sheevy, and Vaughn Hartung. Your Honors, it takes courage to run for office, to serve in public office, to make hard decisions while you're in office. It does not take courage to anonymously intimidate, harass, and bully those public servants. John Doe's petition here combines both cowardice and hypocrisy by seeking to keep his own identity private without any regard for the privacy rights that he trampled by invading the privacy of Ms. Sheevy and Mr. Hartung. More than 2 years after the filing of this action, we still don't know John Doe's identity. And we've been unable to meaningfully proceed with discovery or advance the litigation because of that barrier and the other barriers that have been thrown up. The private investigator already attempted to keep that identity secret by arguing to this court that there was a private investigator privilege and arguing that that name was a trade secret. This court wasted no time in a very short order rejecting both of those premises. And then it went back down to the district court to do this all again. And we're doing it all again on the idea that there is a First Amendment right to anonymous conduct. Doesn't exist, not in one case, saying that there is a right to anonymous conduct. The rights that have been discussed in these cases are the right to anonymous speech. There's not even speech at issue in this case because John Doe is even taking the position that he wasn't aware the GPS trackers were placed on the vehicle and he didn't receive any of that information. Obviously, that has to be tested in discovery, but at this point, what is the First Amendment right that he's even invoking here to begin the protections, to begin the analyses for all the cases that we've discussed? After all of that additional delay, he now comes to this court and asks this court to start something new, which is some sort of meet and confer discovery process, and not the relief he sought in his briefing, not the relief he sought in the protective order, which was the complete prevention of the disclosure of his identity. We're not talking about a protective order, about an attorney's eyes only privilege. What the request was below was only for the absolute protection of his identity, followed by the quashing of those subpoenas or the prevention of that disclosure. That's all that's before this court today. And for all the reasons that we'll go into and that are in the briefing, this court absolutely should not create that precedent. Although we're discussing some interesting and some abstract First Amendment questions today, at the end of the day, any decision that prevents the disclosure of the identity of John Doe to plaintiffs, to Ms. Sheevy and Mr. Hartung, completely prevent our ability to proceed with this case and take it to a jury trial. Because that's the end result, there can be no question that under any balancing test that's adopted, the only result is that we have to proceed to trial with the identity of the defendant. There was not a request to proceed under a pseudonym so that we know it and the court knows the identity, but the public doesn't. They haven't even begun to reach their burden of showing that this information shouldn't be disclosed to the media or to the public, let alone to the parties who need that information to conduct discovery. I'd like to begin by breaking down the privilege claims with the assertion that there is even a First Amendment right at issue in this case. There is not a First Amendment right to anonymously hire a private investigator. And I would disagree with the conclusion that was put forward by opposing counsel, that there is such a right and that you can engage in anonymous political conduct. No court and no case to our knowledge has ever extended it that far to say that there's a right to engage in anonymous conduct. Now, is there a First Amendment right to engage a private investigator? We agree that's what the Chichenin case stands for. To the extent that's persuasive, this court have no reason to doubt that. And indeed, there's a lot of other types of conduct that would be protected by the First Amendment that is not non-expressive speech, but is speech within the confines of the First Amendment that allow the facilitation of that free exercise. A few examples would be recording public proceedings, the case earlier today. I mean, other examples of where you have access to documents that involves conduct, not necessarily speech itself. But we're not even at conduct that leads to speech. Right now, we're at a situation where we have conduct that is tortious, and there's a claim that somehow that was necessary to ultimately engage in speech. For that reason, it's quite distinguishable, that entire body of law about anonymous internet speakers, whether it's the Sony decision or everything else, those cases are quite different. The Wirt versus Twitter case is the one that comes to mind as well. Those cases involve a situation where there's an anonymous individual who is speaking, and that speech is at the heart of the claim. It's a defamation claim on the internet, or it's a copyright claim that they have the most minimal, I think the decision that was referenced earlier, the most minimal protections in that somewhat expressive activity, which is downloading a piece of copyrighted material. And the courts have said, well, maybe you have some First Amendment right to choose what music you're illegally downloading and to spread that to other people. Weighing that, you know, in the context of those balancing tests isn't really what we're getting at today. But in those contexts, at least there's speech involved. We're not even at step one before we start getting into the case. Now, in addition to whether there's a First Amendment right to engage in this conduct and to remain anonymous, John Doe's position is exceptionally hard to credit here because, as I said previously, he's taking the position that he didn't even see this tracking information, that he didn't review it. Now, he can still be held liable even if that's true, and we know the standard from McKesson and otherwise that if it's foreseeable, you can still be vicariously liable and the like. But that's something that obviously needs to be tested in discovery. It can't be tested without knowing John Doe's identity. But it also shows you how implausible his position is here today, that he's saying, I have a First Amendment right to do something based on something we can't test or verify or even present to you. I have a First Amendment right just to do something, and I was going to use this for political conduct. Maybe that's true, and maybe it'll come out and discover that that's true, but it could just as easily, in this case or in another case, have been a disgruntled business partner hiring a private investigator, an ex-spouse, a family member hiring a private investigator. And then when you get caught, when the situation turns ugly, when they cross a line, engage in reprehensible conduct, get into a car crash, any number of other situations, you submit an anonymous declaration saying, I have a First Amendment right. I was doing this about a matter of public concern. I can't even begin to know how many cases I could win if before my client appeared, I could submit an anonymous declaration that couldn't be cross-examined or verified saying, I had a First Amendment right to breach the contract, I'm out. And then the case ends. And the other side says, those are just, you know, allegations. We can't have our cases proceed in that fashion where we don't even get to discovery because some person has advanced a First Amendment right without even being able to show the court. There was no motion for, you know, to submit anything under seal and camera in the district court. There was no kind of verification to say, this is who I really am. Don't tell the other side, but at least this allows you to check what First Amendment rights are at issue and what my real interests are.
So they didn't even go through the steps that a Doe plaintiff would go through on the under Rule 10?
None. What should have happened, right, was a request to proceed under a pseudonym to show the court that this is the evidence and these are the reasons. And you compare this to the actual cases where someone has been allowed to proceed under a pseudonym. You know, not sexual harassment victims have been allowed to proceed under a pseudonym because their interests weren't compelling enough. The native and non-native children in the Kamehameha decision from Ninth Circuit, where there were actual death threats, real risks of physical and retaliatory harm to these individuals, still had to proceed under their real names. Yet John Doe isn't proceeding under his real name without any assertion of how he actually faces any retaliation, other than being held accountable for the consequences of his own actions. To get to this, there's not a First Amendment right. We think the court's analysis then turns to whether there's a conditional or a ancillary First Amendment right that would allow this private investigator privilege. And this is the breathing room, breathing space analysis, where there is some conduct that you need to allow in order to allow you to exercise your First Amendment rights. That would be, you know, traveling, being able to walk into a place of protest, doing these other things that aren't expressive but are necessary to exercise those First Amendment rights. As an example, like it may not be that you have a First Amendment right to mow your lawn or to mow your neighbor's lawn, but if you intend to mow some political message on the lawn or your neighbor's lawn, maybe there's a First Amendment right at issue in that particular circumstance. But you don't get to that until you can at least articulate what the First Amendment issue is, and then you have to balance that conduct versus the other considerations. Here, John Doe can't get to it because he can't show the political message that's even at issue, and certainly can't do it because this, again, may not have been illegal, although in 25 states at the time of the action it was, actually was criminally prohibited in 25 states.
But it was not at the time this occurred in Nevada. It was not illegal.
Correct. And your question, Justice Pickering, was the pleadings are, or there are cases that are split on whether it was tortious. To answer your question, that was briefed in the motion to dismiss stage. It was resolved in favor of the, in favor of our position that it was tortious, obviously, because the Ringelberg decision and the Post-Jones decision were much, based on the development of technology, were much more persuasive, in my opinion, to the district court that this is something that we should prohibit. And even those cases,
doesn't make it a Doe pleading that is permitted without going through the motions. I mean, I get that.
True, of course. And yeah. But even the cases that go opposite of that position, finding that the attachment of a GPS tracker is not tortious, those are situations where there is no evidence that the car was driven anywhere except public highways. And that's not the case here based on, you know, what we think discovery will show and what's in the allegations. So even those cases would be distinguishable. But of course, we have the Nevada precedent from Ringelberg and others showing that it should be considered tortious here. And in fact, and this is, I'm going outside of the pleadings a little bit, but private investigator McNeely sued the Sparks Police Department in federal court for an invasion of his privacy. This is the level of hypocrisy we have in this case, saying that the Sparks Police Department shouldn't have disclosed his identity to Mayor Sheevy. In that case, the district court had no issue saying there's no First Amendment right to privacy. And in fact, you should, as a former law enforcement individual, you, Mr. McNeely, should be quite aware of the seriousness of this investigation into who placed the tracker onto Mayor Sheevy and why that would be a huge concern to her for her safety. So again, that's another piece of supporting evidence in terms of why it should be considered tortious in Nevada. So we don't think there's a First Amendment right. We don't think there's even a conditional First Amendment right that's necessary to allow him to exercise his free speech. If you look at what he's actually requesting, which is to prevent the disclosure of his name to plaintiffs in this case, how does that allow him or chill him from exercising his right to speech in the future? He can still engage a private investigator anonymously in the future. Whether that's something that will hold up in court or not remains to be seen, but he could still engage a private investigator to investigate whoever he wants. And even regardless of this court's decision, he can still try to publish anonymously as much as he wants. Nothing stops him from publishing anonymously. Nothing stops his free speech. Nothing chills it. There are no freedom of association rights at issue here. So there's nothing that prevent that affects the overall quantum of speech that John Doe can put forward to the public. Nothing whatsoever. Doesn't even stop him from gathering information in a lawful way. The only potential chilling effect is someone who hires a private investigator, and then that private investigator engages in tortious conduct. And I would respond to that, my own question, by saying, I think we should try to chill that activity. And that's what the purpose of tort law is for, is to make sure that we do chill behavior that we don't want in society, which is when it crosses the bounds of reasonable behavior and what's expected. That's the Dedeman case from the Ninth Circuit, where the New York Times reporters, absolutely, New York Times or Time magazine, can absolutely engage in efforts to gather news. They can go after sources, investigate all they want, but they can't trick someone to let them into their private house and obtain information through deceit, through fraud, and through a private recording that wasn't authorized. You can hire whatever private investigator you want. You can't have that private investigator break into a house. And we've never gotten the answer from Mr. McNeely, from John Doe, or from Five Alpha as to why you think there's a First Amendment right to engage in conduct that's akin to breaking into a house to gain information about your political, what you claim to be a political opponent, a political issue that's of public concern. When drafting this opinion, Your Honors, we think it's difficult because only because of how shifting John Doe's positions have been. Meaning what we heard throughout the briefing was, we want a protective order stopping the disclosure of our identity to plaintiffs. What you heard during the oral argument was, maybe we have the least restrictive means, some tailoring of that discovery. It's not something that's been briefed. It's not something that would be argued. And we think those requests were waived on appeal. But when considering the balancing test, whatever balancing test you choose, and they all sort of boil down to the same principles, which is there a First Amendment right? Can you state a prima facie case for a First Amendment infringement? And that prima facie First Amendment case isn't just, am I doing something about politics? It's actually a prima facie case of infringement, meaning in Perry versus Schwarzenegger, there have to be some harms involved. You have to have been, you know, be able to show a potential for harassment, be able to show that your membership will be reduced. Perry versus Schwarzenegger, you could easily do that because there were rank and file membership, and you could argue that people would be less likely to join a potentially unpopular political group if their membership was disclosed. We don't have those countervailing First Amendment concerns. Even if he had gone through the initial process and submitted evidence about his First Amendment concerns, we don't even have that. But we also don't have anything that falls within the category of harassment, of chilling effects on speech, of lack of membership in an association, of anything that would actually go on the side of his First Amendment protection, other than the disclosure of his name and the political or, you know, the potential public opprobrium of having engaged in that conduct, which everyone involved in a lawsuit faces. On the other side of the scale, under the Perry test, you have what we need for discovery. And their position in briefing was, we're appearing in the lawsuit, that's enough, there's no more need, you don't have any more need for your name, for our name outside of kind of our appearance in the lawsuit. The discovery commissioner flatly rejected that. The district court did, and this court should too. We can't take the deposition of John Doe without his name. We can't verify his statements. We can't cross-examine him. We can't look at other witnesses who may have been disclosed. We don't even know if he's really anonymous. He disclosed his name to the private investigator, for all we know, we'll be able to find out that he disclosed his name to many people, that he's been publishing this information elsewhere, or that he has circulated distribution lists to other people involving this information and said, yeah, I did it, but I'm going to win this case. The sanction that we'll be seeking at that point, after going through 2 years of arguments about his potential anonymity, only to find out he's not really anonymous, will be significant. But all the information, the use of the GPS tracking devices, whether he knew about it, who received that information, what did that information show, what else did they receive, John Doe's motivations for placing it on the vehicles, all of those issues are at play and involved in discovery. And all of those require the knowledge of John Doe, and personally, not behind some screen, not in an AAO order, but something that we can take to a jury and show, this is why we need this information, this is what we're going to do for it, and these are the punitive damages we're asking you to award against John Doe, because we need information about his financial condition, and we need information about his prior conduct. I think in closing and drafting the decision, we would ask you to keep in mind the sole relief sought, which is that John Doe's name doesn't become known to the public, to the media, to us, to any parties that might be interested, or even to the district court, let alone to the jury. That's the sole request, and we think that's not supported by any case law anywhere on the record. And the First Amendment protections, to the extent they even exist, must give way to our ability to pursue our claim and obtain justice. John Doe did a bad thing. He can't hide, and he must ultimately face the consequences of what he did.
Thank you.
Thank you. Laura?
I want to be very clear. Again, we are dealing with just allegations of tortious conduct. John Doe didn't place the tracker. John Doe denies that he had anything to do with the tracker, had no knowledge of the tracker.
How can they show that that position that he's taking is true or not unless they can do discovery?
We can, of course, phase discovery. We can do deposition by written interrogatory. We could mask his identity. We disclosed John Doe's identity to this court under seal. We could disclose his identity for the Rule 26 disclosure.
Huh. Okay. Sorry, my bad.
So it's entirely possible to do this. We don't sacrifice constitutional liberties on the altar of political expediency. I think of defamation cases involving public officials require an extra procedural hurdle.
This is conduct. This isn't... Oh, go ahead.
Justice Sigler, I'm sorry.
So phase discovery, all these things. Have you made all these arguments down in front of the discovery commissioner?
No, we just asked for protective order.
So once we get done here, then we go back and you're going to ask for phasing or come back up. Why didn't you ask for that at the beginning?
Because we believe it's the respondents, once we've asserted the complaint, asserted the First Amendment liberty, the First Amendment privilege at issue, under Perry, it becomes the real parties in interest to propose something least restrictive. It's their burden at that point to infringe upon the First Amendment.
Can you articulate what the First Amendment issue is here, as counsel was saying? How do we even get to the First Amendment?
Yeah, counsel mentioned this breathing space that sometimes conduct implicates a First Amendment right. We submit that this is the breathing space articulated in I think it's Perry, about the right to petition and the right to potentially criticize if those allegations were true. In other words, my client sought to investigate what he believed were credible allegations. He used a licensed, regulated and private investigator. Didn't go off cowboy style. Used a licensed private investigator, which is a policy matter should be encouraged to do. And if we're not going to permit citizens to investigate their alleged crimes or alleged indiscretion, alleged misconduct of their elected officials, that's a chilling effect on the right to petition. It's a chilling effect on the right to free speech, to criticize those officials for that conduct.
And what's the harm of disclosing your client's name?
Again, my client has already been, is fears retaliation. And once there's a chilling effect, once we show you that there's a potential chilling effect, there's a potential free speech.
But that's all speculative, right? Hey, has he actually been threatened by anyone? Has he actually suffered? Is he associated with an organization that's going to lose its standing? I mean, I'm just, why should we just take your word for it that perhaps he'll be retaliated against?
And again, because it's a chilling effect on all speech as a general proposition, number one. Number two, it's a bit of a chicken and egg position, right? If I disclose things about why my client fears political retaliation, that may be that in a public forum, that may give, that may unmask him as may I be able to identify him from the risks that he believes he's subject to.
Okay.
I want to put it simply. If this court does not recognize a constitutional privilege and take steps to protect that privilege, and later is determined that John Doe was not liable or not involved in this alleged conduct, the constitutional right would have been eviscerated for judicial expediency. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much to both sides. Interesting issues. We appreciate your time and the argument today. We're going to take the matter under advisement, and the court will be in recess until the next call of the court.